You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Christopher Arthur Canty joins us right now.
Where'd Arthur come from?
I just made it up.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, that's not even my middle initial. It's an L.
What is your middle name?
My middle name is Lee. It's my mom's maiden name. So that's a little fun fact for all the listeners at home that didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. So my grandmother's maiden name is my middle name, and it's O'Hara, and thus it makes my initials rather unfortunate. But let's move on. Chris, first of all, let's get some Yankee talk. You being the massive Yankee fan you are, Lindor or LeMahieu? You can have one, but not both. Who do you want?
Well, I mean, if you're going to trade for Lindor, that's going to come with a massive contract extension. And I'm just not sure the Yankees and Hal Steinbrenner have the appetite to go there. You know what I mean? Because you already have this huge contract with Giancarlo Stanton that's not going anywhere. I mean, at some point, you're going to have to make a decision on what you're going to do with Aaron Judge. And you got to think, if you were to make that move for Francisco Lindor, that would be Brian Cashman definitively saying, we're probably not going to make that financial commitment to Aaron Judge in the next couple of seasons. So I don't know if that's necessarily the direction that you go. I heard you floating out the possibility of a reunion with Didi Gregorius. And I got to tell you, I like that on multiple fronts. First of all, you have an opportunity to move Gleyber Torres from shortstop back to second base. And he feels like a lot less of a defensive liability at that position. And you're bringing somebody that's a good fielder, but somebody that's also going to be a steady hand in the locker room in terms of your leadership. And I feel like this Yankees clubhouse could use a lot more of that. So I think you go that direction, and then you try to assess how you need to address your pitching staff.
Not
that's
got to
be the next area of concern.
Yeah, not to mention a left-handed bat. Like, that would kill the Yankees, right? And, you know, if you're bringing back LeMahieu, and you have LeMahieu and Didi together, I mean, that's some pretty damn good leadership there. And it's versatility. It's a lot of different things. Lindor, to me, is just that, Chris. I mean, we can go chapter and verse through all of the contracts, the massive ones that have been handed out around baseball. And, I mean, you just saw Clayton Kershaw's finally pay off into a championship. And I know that contracts get based more on production of the player and all other sorts of mitigating factors, but here it's about championships. So if you're going to hand $300 million to Lindor, or let's say $80 million over 4 years to LeMahieu based on what we've seen the last year, the last 2 years, it's not close. It's not close.
No, I mean, listen, Lindor is a phenomenal player. I mean, he's 27 years old. He's a four-time All-Star. He's going to hit around 280, give you 80-plus RBIs, 30-plus home runs, and he's got a platinum glove. So I don't know too many teams around baseball that wouldn't want a shortstop with that type of credentials and production. But it's just a matter of making it fit. And I don't know that this fits the long-term plan of what the Yankees want to do, because you hear them constantly talking about wanting to stay below the salary tax threshold, the luxury tax threshold, and you know, adding a contract like Lindor and then going about addressing the other needs for the team for the upcoming season. I don't know how that's a possibility.
Chris Canty joining us, as he does every Monday with Bart and Han, or every Friday, rather, at Bart and Han. What the hell am I thinking? It's Monday.
honestly. It's 2020. Everything is upside down, man.
Yeah,
it's
no
been
kidding.
A crazy week.
There's only going to be so much longer we can blame it on that, too. But
listen, I'm just hoping that 2021 is a lot better than this one. It's a low bar to clear, but I'm just saying.
It better be.
It better be.
I tell you, when I move to Costa Rica, it's going to be phenomenal for that matter. Chris, you know, pitching-wise, do you want Trevor Bauer?
Who wouldn't want Trevor Bauer? I mean, he's got swing and miss stuff. The guy's talking about he wants to pitch every fourth day, not every fifth day. He wants more work. I mean, he was dominant this season for the Reds. Who couldn't use a guy like Trevor Bauer at the top of your rotation? And then you consider where the Yankees are at. I mean, James Paxton's going to be gone. We'll see what happens with Tanaka in free agency. But, and we don't know, you know, exactly how or when Severino was going to get back in 2021. So, I mean, just to have somebody to give you that 1-2 punch with Gerrit Cole, I think that would be huge, but that's also going to come along with a significant price tag. And again, you know, it depends on, you know, how Brian Cashman prioritizes his needs on this team going into next season. But of course you want Trevor Bauer. Of course you want.
My only thought about Bauer is he a Yankee? You know, is he going to be a, you know, if things are not going right and he's coming off of this career year, is he going to be a pain in the ass?
Well, I mean, listen, I understand where you're coming from with that, but it's about competing for championships. You just said that 5 minutes ago. It's about championships, and Trevor Bauer would help you compete for a championship. Now, you wonder about the relationship between him and Gerrit Cole and how that would potentially work out, but, I mean, listen, the guy is filthy. So, I mean, being able to have that dude along with Gerrit Cole, I mean, you feel a lot better about the rest of the guys in the rotation when you got those guys carrying the water. So, I personally, as a Yankees fan, I'm tired of not being able to get past the ALDS or the ALCS and into the World Series. You're talking about this franchise going a decade without being in the World Series. That hadn't happened since, like, the 1920s. So, I mean, at some point, we got to break through, and a guy like Trevor Bauer on your pitching staff would go a long ways to helping you do that.
The voice is that of the strikingly handsome Chris Canty. And I mean that. You are a handsome man. I mean, come on.
We're holding it down for the 300-pounders, Carlin. Me and you, buddy.
So no, it ain't me and you. It's you. if nothing, I'm a realist. Chris, the Giants are exceptionally frustrating to watch these days. And the other night was the first time that it felt unacceptable to me in a way that Daniel Jones lost the game for the Giants. And I can, you know, there were a few other times where you could make the case that that happened. But from a development standpoint, that was a game that Daniel Jones could not let get away. And I'm wondering where you're coming down right now on Jones. I know the turnovers. I've heard you talk about the turnovers in 36 and 21 games, but is time running out right now?
Well, listen, it's this is going to be a big game for Daniel Jones this Sunday. Now, fortunately for him, he's had success against the Washington football team, the only NFC East opponent that he's actually beaten. But, I mean, it's starting to get to the point in the season where you're like, okay, Daniel Jones, this is your 22nd start. At some point, you got to stop turning the football over at the rate that you have. You've got a streak of 9 consecutive games that you've done that. And then going back to the beginning of last year, he's got 12 multi-turnover games. So it's getting to the point now where you're pointing to games and you're saying the turnovers are what's causing the Giants to lose. I mean, Bruce Arians said it after the Monday night game with the Buccaneers rolling. He said the kid was trying to do too much. Without those turnovers, you're probably talking about the Giants winning that game. So, I mean, that's the opposing coach saying because of your mistakes, Daniel Jones, your team lost the game. And so you start to look at it and say, is this something that can be corrected? He had some turnover troubles at Duke. We know that he was well coached down there with David Cutcliffe. So it's not a matter of, you know, does he not know what he's doing? It's just a matter of, can he help himself? Like the turnovers that he had in the second half, especially the one where he was in the grasp of Shaq Barrett. I think he threw it up for grabs, and it was Sean Murphy Bunting that came down with it. Like that's a horrific play. Like you have to know to take the sack under those circumstances. Know when to hold him, know when to fold him. Like it made no sense for him to throw that football. And both of the turnovers that he had in the second half of that Monday night game came when the Giants had a lead. So it doesn't make sense to me some of the plays that he tries to force given the circumstances that the team is in. But that being said, you know, this game on Sunday is going to be a huge ball game, because if the Giants don't pull this one off, you're going to have a hard time finding a win in the rest of their schedule.
And you know, from being in the league, there are times where guys on the team are going to start looking at the quarterback when this is happening, like, what are we doing here, bro? And I'm wondering if that time has already come.
I'm sure that guys in a quiet moment to themselves are thinking, you know, listen, this guy's got to give us a chance. Especially the guys on the defensive side of the ball. Carlin, we got to admit, his defense is a lot better than we thought it would be coming into this season based on the personnel.
Absolutely.
And some of the decisions that Dave Gettleman made this offseason in free agency went a long ways to helping it. Blake Martinez signing, Kyler Fackrell signing, and of course James Bradbury, who's having a career year. And you can make an argument for having one of the best years of any corner in the National Football League. But the defense is giving the Giants a chance to be in games. Every game that they play, save one, the 49ers in week three, has been a fourth quarter game. And so you start talking about margin for error. Daniel Jones is hurting his team because he's turning the football over. This is not an immensely talented roster. So you know that they're going to have to get by on effort by scheme and play calling, which both coordinators are doing very well. But it comes down to your quarterback not making those mistakes that cause you to lose games. And unfortunately, Daniel Jones hasn't been able to limit that. Now, I will say this. Daniel Jones gives them the best chance to win games at the quarterback position. I'm in no hurry to see Colt McCoy. Like guys in the locker room,
they go to practice. We can't see Colt McCoy. What good does that do?
I'm just saying. People are saying it, and I'm just trying to quash that a little bit because, listen, guys in the locker room, even though they're frustrated with Daniel Jones, they know that Colt McCoy is not a better option than Daniel Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no question. Chris, why would you even consider playing Sam Darnold on Monday night?
I don't know. I have no idea. But I guess that makes perfect sense for the Jets.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you know, the thing that you think that they shouldn't do or they can't do, they end up doing. Going all the way back to them hiring Adam Gase right after he got fired by the Miami Dolphins. Like, it's a team that you play twice a year, and that program steadily declined each year that he was the head coach. Yet Chris Johnson saw something where he was like, you know what? I got to have that guy as my head coach, even though nobody else around the NFL was going to hire him. So them playing Sam Darnold, when clearly he's got something going on with his shoulder, it makes perfect sense. Because we've already devalued the kid to the point where he was the third overall pick 3 years ago, and we're already looking to cut bait for him. Why not devalue him some more? So when he gets to the offseason and there's, you know, we're talking about moving the kid because we've got the number one overall pick. We're going to take Trevor Lawrence. You're getting next to nothing for him. Why don't we do that? Because that makes sense.
I just hate it all around. And here's what I don't understand. Draw this line for me, okay? Play this out. Where is the line between when the player says he wants to play and somebody steps in and makes that decision for him in the NFL? We know where it is in college. Where is it in the NFL?
Well, I think you have to, the medical staff and the general manager and the head coach have to be on the same page in terms of the risk that comes along with the player that's hurt going into a game. And under these circumstances, to me, the risk is not worth the reward. I mean, what is the reward for having Sam Darnold go out there and play on Monday night against the Patriots? What is the reward? That's the part I don't understand. Right now, you're 0-8. It's all about evaluating the young talent. But if you've got a young talent that's banged up, and we're talking about a quarterback potentially dealing with a separated shoulder, why would you want to put him in harm's way? Especially coming off of that game last year when he played against the Patriots and the kid, Bill Belichick had him seeing ghosts. Why would you want to put him in that game? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, at this situation with Sam Darnold and this shoulder injury, I just feel like what's in Sam's best interest and what's in the organization's best interest is actually aligned. Because if you're Joe Douglas, you don't want to win any games. Why would you want to win games?
You wouldn't.
At this point, you just want to play out the string with the season and have the number one overall pick. Now, you want the team to be more competitive because you'd like to evaluate some of the young players that you have on this roster. But, I mean, you signed a capable backup in Joe Flacco just in case Sam Darnold got nicked up this year because we've seen him miss games in the two seasons prior due to various ailments. What I don't understand is what's wrong with Joe Flacco going out there and playing quarterback on Monday night, especially if Sam's right shoulder, the most valuable asset the organization has right now, why would you jeopardize that? That doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense to me either. I floated this week, conspiracy theory. To keep Trevor Lawrence away from the New York Jets in one of these two games down the stretch of the season, could you see Belichick, you know, under disguise taking a dive?
No.
No?
No, just because.
I mean, he doesn't look like somebody that's going to retire anytime soon.
No, he doesn't. And I'm sure he probably wouldn't like to have a talent like Trevor Lawrence in the division, but the Jets have to develop said talent. I mean, we're talking about Trevor Lawrence now. I mean, there were some similar conversations, not exactly the same, but similar conversations 4 years ago about Sam Darnold. And the Jets actually got him, and they've done everything that they can to ruin the kid. So, I mean, you know, I don't think Bill Belichick is really, you know, holding his breath about the Jets and worried about them getting the number one overall pick, because they've proven that they can't develop the young talent that they do draft.
Right. So he just counts on them screwing up themselves.
So I don't think he's worried about it. But the one thing,
the more sure thing is their incompetence on it.
They're incompetent. And so, like I said, this Jets team, I don't have any high expectations for them on Monday night. I think the line is 7.5, and I think the Patriots will cover that easily.
Yeah, I'm still, like, just the diabolical nature of him. I don't know. I'm thinking about.
Well, nobody can figure him out, right? That's the thing. So you're always trying to guess, what is he thinking?
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. I am a non-athlete. I know you wouldn't know that to look at me, but I am a non-athlete.
You're a sneaky athlete.
Well, I stole 10 bases in high school. Never got thrown out once. That's true.
There's a lot of muscle laying dormant.
Yes.
Under your exoskeleton.
Exactly. It's like when, you know, the volcano erupts, you don't want to be around because it's going to be violent. But having said that.
No, you know what's going to be violent? This Rutgers game this weekend.
That's
That'll
why
be violent.
Why you got to go there?
That'll be
violent. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. 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 I mean, for Pete's sake. We've had, got a great win week
for Shiano's sake. For Shiano's sake. Ryan Day, take it easy.
Are you kidding me? Think about what you're saying.
Well, I have this question. This has happened to me twice in the last 2 weeks. Have you ever gone to bed and you're fine and you wake up with a pulled hamstring?
No.
That has happened to me twice in the last 2 weeks. How alarming would that be on a scale of 1 to 10?
That's concerning. How did you do that?
Certainly nothing that you would consider worth it.
Yeah, I mean, to pull a hamstring, you got to be moving quickly, and I don't.
Nope, that wasn't happening.
That's not you.
Okay. No, it's not. Again, I am. I don't like to use the word spry because it implies that I'm older. But I am a cat-like in some situations, but it can't be when I'm sleeping, and I don't know how this has happened. I legitimately have pulled a hamstring twice while sleeping the last 2 weeks. I have no idea what to do about it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
I need a full-time training.
I can't help you with that one.
Yeah.
I can't help you with that one. Carlin, we got to get to the bottom of something, though, man.
What?
So, you know, I do this spot with Bart and Allen every single Friday on their show. Most of the time we do it at the top of the noon hour, sometimes at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've been floating it out there the last couple of weeks that Bart Scott still has yet to pay up on the bet about my L.A. Lakers getting to the NBA Finals because he felt like, for whatever reason, the Clippers are going to knock him off and win the championship. I said, no way, not with LeBron and AD. Mm-hmm. So let the season play out. Of course, the Lakers win the chip. You know,
LeBron James.
Yeah, exactly. Since then, hadn't heard anything from Bart about paying back the bet. And then I brought it up on DCR again this week. I actually talked about it yesterday. And lo and behold, no Bart Scott today on the show.
He's ducking.
How about that? Isn't that ironic?
He's ducking.
I got bubbles on my damn screen.
Yeah, he's avoiding me like he owes me child support.
When you
I
use
don't understand
butt, you set me up for the butt.
No, I didn't set him up. You took the bait. I don't know what he was thinking.
What were the stakes for the wager?
$5,000 to the charity of the winner's choice.
So didn't you guys bet like a car a couple of years ago?
We did bet a Bentley, the Bentley bet. Now, I actually bought him out from that bet and donated money to his foundation, but I paid off the bet.
Right.
I paid off the bet, right? So now that the shoe is on the other foot, I'm just saying Bart Scott can't get the money to the kids for the Chris Caney Foundation. I don't understand that. Bart's got piles of money over there.
Oh, absolutely.
Piles of money. I don't understand why he wouldn't donate to the kids. It's a tax write-off for him.
I saw Bart in 2 days in a row before I knew him. One day he was on that 30 for 30 broke you know, and talking about all the guys that about how you had to save your money. And the next day he was on the TV show Tanked, where they're putting in the outside fish tank at his house. And there's like barbecuing around it. There's sharks in there. There's
the sea moss.
There's a Mako in there. I don't know, man. And if
don't
you
even talk about the garage over there. Don't talk about Bart Scott's garage and what he got in that thing. Whew.
I have never made it to the house.
All the sunlight.
But I have heard. And I find that all, you know what? It's outrageous. It's egregious. It's preposterous. And, you know, all of a sudden, oh, today, Mr. Big Man is doing something else, you know? Exactly. Can't show up. That's garbage.
Doing a national radio show that's simulcast on television. But, you know, he's not going to talk to me about trying to get the Chris Canty Foundation all money.
There were times where I worked with him before where, you know, hey, I got to put in a couple of bucks for this. I'm not going to lie. Chasing him a little bit more than I thought.
He's a little tight with the wallet.
And I wouldn't say tight, but I would say, you know, judicious.
Judicious. Got it.
Christopher, thank you, brother.
My man, thanks for having me on.
Don't miss Bart Scott and Alan Hahn. Weekdays at 11 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN.